Mr. Gormley, reel 28.
Inch 38.
In foul battles we were talking about, what happened to you next?
Well, the battle was still on for Kohima at the time. So I was 161 Brigade, who had left us earlier, with by air. They'd been air forced, and they'd gone up to try and relieve Kohima. But of course they'd landed, and they'd got, they'd got themselves encircled as well, you see. So, they'd got themselves encircled, so then the time came, so it was right after about a month or so when we couldn't get this hump under control and that leg, so we decided to bypass it and that. We got the other one under control, the Nunchigar, or whatever the name was, and we got that under control because we managed to capture it and hold it. But this other one, this bloody hump, I don't think we ever got out of that. And we were sent then to try and push our way through up to Kohima to relieve the pressure on our 161 Brigade, who was actually had gone in to support the second British deal, which my brother was with. He'd been transferred as a reinforcement into the second battalion down by Pinkney. Out of the East York, where he'd been with in Bombay when I met him. And although we were in there, and we were forcing our way up the road, and were fighting all the way, they didn't just give in, you know, because they were leaving blocks here and were falling into action on the road. Now, the road I'm talking about is a road that climbs up the bloody hills. You're going up to 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 feet. And the don't sounds are just different, just probably about the back end of May, I think. About the back end of May, something like that.
Well, it was 1944, this is?
44, yeah. No, about the middle of May, about the middle of May. And we were pushing up, we were just battering our way up towards them. We've got to have them on their own, right, but the ones who just admitting defeat, they were leaving delaying parties all the way. And we're falling, and we're having to cut into the side of the road and drop the bloody guns into action and fire over the top of them and that. And
so every time you got stopped, the infantry ahead of you, you were stopped and fired?
Well, you had the infantry going up with you. They were enfilading along the sides of the hills, you know.
So you were pretty close to the sharp end yourself.
Well, we couldn't do anything about it. There's only one road. that wasn't even the road. It was only being hewn out of the rock side, you know. It did a splendid job, the blokes had done it. I think this had been done prior to them coming in. They get big lumps of rocks and that still lying in the road, you know, you have to be careful, like, otherwise you broke it, but he soaks up and that. And we fought our way up there for about 6 years, I think it would be, towards Kohima. And we're just getting within reach of the 161 Brigade. And we're firing over the top of them onto the Japs that was still surrounding them. And a bloke comes up, he wanted the command postage. Right, bloody hell, what the hell's the matter now? So I raced along the very command post, and Captain Gilpatrick, Captain Gilpatrick. He said, get your kit together. I said, get your kit together, what for? He said, you're going home. I said, that's for. I said, bugger off. He said, no, no. He said, word's come through, you've got to go home. You're on your way tomorrow. And I thought, thank God for that. I had never slept a bloody week all night. I thought, oh God, let nothing happen till I get out of this bloody hell. I honestly did. I thought, God. And anyway, when the night fell and we were still stuck where we were, like, and got up the next morning and they brought the whole lot down. We were seven of them made it, you know. And we all got on the chips in the back of this pretty sweet tunnel and that was saying, let nothing happen on the bloody way back to me.
This was your gun crew, all of
them? No.
Oh, sorry, the other, that's right, the other seven who...
Me and the other seven under the...
That would been as long as you were, yes.
Been out as long as I had, or near enough, like, you know. So, and we were set up back here, but we were sitting there, of course, you still had to carry rifles, wherever you went, I mean, it was probably a bit big to fight with, because you never knew where they were going to spring up. And, anywhere, after the struggle, because the conditions on the foot were absolutely terrible. The bloody mud was that deep on the roads and that, you know, and you had to get the bloody, dig the bloody trail of the gum in and that, you know.
So the conditions, before we leave the front and go on your journey home, the conditions that you're working under were pretty bad.
Oh, terrible.
What about feeding you? What were you getting for food? And
yeah, the teams are bullying me for the time, like, you know. It's funny, you used to survive on teams are bullying me for biscuits. You've only so long, like, but at least you had more than a bloody jack, I mean. They had none at all. I don't know where they were getting their group from. That was the only reason they knocked them back, because I had nothing to eat.
And you assume that you slept round the guns in your slip trenches, did you?
Well, yeah, you sleep wherever you were. Normally, as we were travelling up, like, there was nowhere to put your guns out, put your wagons out the road, so you wagon your gun and your limber, you're all just alongside each other, and then all you had to do was to limber up and carry on up the road. There was no passing places or anything like that. You just had to step on the road. You couldn't go down the hillside, because, I mean, you could go down 2,000 feet.
So it must be basically a crawling pace that you were doing. If anyone broke down, how did you get over that one?
Put them over the side.
Just push them off the road?
Put them straight over the road, because there's no way you can get past. No way you could get past on that road.
And sheltering, this was the rainy season, did you say? Was this the rainy season?
That's how everything had turned. So
were you ever dry, you know, yourselves?
No, we never got dry. No way dry, you know. Everything just dried on your back, in the steam. Your own body dried it, or if it fared up enough to let you dry. I mean, you had ground sheets and that. But I mean, it's the same for you all. Don't forget, it's a warm rain, mate. It's not a cold rain, if you understand what I mean. Not like getting a rain here in the middle of winter or something like that, you know. It's a rain, but it's very torrential, I admit it, but you just put your tin hat on and everything, that on the top, you couldn't get less.
Did all this affect the health of the unit?
No, we'd had these metacrine and atabrine tablets, which were given to protect us against the likes of malaria and that. And I always said, like I said, and the thing was, they used to turn you more yellow than the bloody Japanese were. I said, that's how we took them in. I said, we thought the bloody Japanese took one. Because you were more yellow than they were. It used to turn your skin yellow.
And were you supervising taking these tablets so that you actually seen taking them?
Everybody knew we had a team, you know.
So presumably you would see that your group of men took them?
My men, I said, right, tablets, right, let's see them down, get the buggers down, you know. Tell them, yeah, you're straight out, get the buggers down, that's the only thing that's going to keep you going up here. And then, when you come out, of course, protection, like, you know, when you came off them, if you'd been all right, which I was, never affected me, but a lot of them that came out did have the malaria in them, like, you know, but I didn't. Never had any malaria.
And what other unpleasant features of this area? You have the rain, and you've got the, obviously, you say.
You've got the rain, the wood, everything where you look is all woods, you know. Woods and woods. So you never knew where a shot was going to come from. So all you had to be on the alert for anything that shot, and then drop into action more or less straight away.
Did you leave a lot of snipers about when he was pulling back?
No. I mean, probably around one or two. I didn't, There was a lot of them in the Arakan. We should tie themselves at the bloody trees down there. So that if you shot them, they'd still be able to shoot you back. You know? Yeah. We used to tie themselves at the trees. And the only way we used to do it, we just used to send the fuse on out over the spray. Spray with a bloody bang on. Would they never come back after that, like, you know. once you knew where it was coming from, they're that tip, you know. And just send everybody in up hydrant till it stops.
Your cooperation with the infantry was by this time pretty good.
Oh yeah, yeah. I admire the infantry lads. They really had the book at the end of the stick. And especially where my brother then was, like, right on the edge of Coima and that, like, I'm pleased in a way I didn't get up there, because I would have hated to be in that up there.
Can I just ask you, did you come across the native people around who...
Oh, yes, a little nuggets.
What were they like?
Oh, yeah, lovely. Oh, thought the world of the British. Well, I thought the world of the British troops. They really did. Yeah, they really did. Aye, it was amazing.
So you were pulled out, Lee? Well,
I came back down to Imphal. And that was the first decent meal we had. Like, from while we were in the attacking Imphal itself. I mean, we had our cooks and everything there, you know, we'd bring grub up as and when they could. But when we were on the move up the road, like, well, we were just more or less living bully and biscuits, you know, because you didn't know how far you were going to go on. While we were down there in the more or less a static position, we had our grub, you know, the grub was put on and everything like that.
So you came back to Imphal, and where did you go after that?
Not an experience I would like to go through again. Norway. That's what happened, you see. Mom Batten had come up to us, hadn't he? It was him that was on his own, you know. It was this Mom Batten. He's like, just threw me talking to him, like, you know, and making me complain, no. And
did you pull out of India pretty quickly? Did you
came back to Imphal. We stopped there overnight, where we were given a really good feed, you know, which we needed actually, because we'd been on bullies biscuits for the last 4 or 5 days. And we got to Imphal, and then the next morning, the planes were taken off, going back to Calcutta and reloading that. And we just jumped on these Dakotas, and they took us back to Calcutta. And from Calcutta we went into this mega transit camp there, where we stayed for about 6, 7 days.
Mm. How did they treat you there? But these are, you know, troops who probably never saw action that were looking after these camps. How did they treat you coming through?
Right.
Were you being regimental and bulling up and so forth?
Oh, no, we're just in a transit camp, no danger of that, because we were in transit, you know, so we just went in there, and we were told we could do what we liked, go where we liked, like in and around the camp, and the Calcutta itself. So we went out there, a couple of good weeks and that, you know, it's just, obviously, like, you know, we've got to have a good meal, and we've got the pictures, and I took those pictures, and things like that, you know. And then we came back, he said, as long as you let us know where you are, so that
you've got the blue light, you know. Were the flesh pots a temptation in the city?
No, not really. Well, worth a sum, like, I mean. It's funny, like, I can honestly say, and I'm not saying it without bragging or anything like that. Like, they never had any bloody appeal for me or that lot. It never had any appeal for that. I was content with boxing and my bloody hobby sport and everything before that and after it.
So after 4 or 5 days, then what happened to you?
Well, it was about 5 or 6 days, something like that. And then we were put on a train to go to Bombay. Now, we were fortunately, you know, being sergeants, because we nearly all sergeants on the coast. We were in a lot of tunable carriage, which meant we had a big long bench, it's like that bench seat each on these, on all these what were termed as first class carriages. Lovely big wide bench seats, and you know, I used to sleep on them all the way down. It took us about 3 days to get down to Dulnally when we got to Dulnally, we had to get off and get this little side train which went away up the place called Dulnally. But coming down through India, it was great, man, you know, because we used to stop nearly every station. And all the very bogs used to pile on the top in there, but nobody had come near us, they wouldn't come near us. And and they used to come round every time they stopped, like, they used to come round and say, Jawai, Jawai, come get your comic egg banjos and all this. It's a good news, sir. And it was very, very, very nice journey, actually, coming back there down. We got off and we went to Dulnally. Now, this is a place that's known for the Dulnally Tap, which was used many, many years ago when the old sailing ships were on the go. And they used to send people who bring come time expired. They used to send them there to wait for a boat coming home. And of course, some of them boats never ever came, like, you know, so they used to finish up all around the twist. And it was only a tented encampment then. But when we got there, it was a lovely encampment, you know, beautiful and there. Horns laid out and everything, nice, like shelly type bungalows and dormitories, and that. And there was a lovely hill just at the back, about, oh, what, 6 or 7 feet high. That's about it. But it climbed up there, and you looked across the mire down, and got a wonderful sight from up there. It was amazing, the difference of about 600 or 700 feet. And what you can see when you get up. So we often used to just go up there because we were there a fortnight, and maybe just go there. And then we were a fortnight, and there was all sorts of things like grade on for us, you know. Nobody bothered, they didn't ask us for any parades or anything like that. And as I say, we were just more or less in transit. And we had lots of other gunners in that, like from other regiments that had gathered up on the way down, and the infantrymen and all them, like, you know. And oh, I just so we had quite a nice time there, actually. Well, one bloody idiot there, he was out the 20th Field Regiment, and he got himself drunk this night, and he come up with his smoking about, like, and I said to the boss, yeah, take him away and put him in the bloody bed, will you? So they took him away and they put him in his bed, like, and about 2 o'clock in the morning, he must have woke up out of a drunken sleep, like, you know, and he come looking for me. And I just let him go back, he's fallen away because we used to sleep out on the veranda. Because it was nice weather, you know, so you just brought your bed out and slept outside, you know, the nice breeze, fresh air, and that. And he's stumbling about under the door looking for me, and I let him go past us, like, and I just whipped out the shot. And I said, he's bloody arm, and I shoved it up his bloody back until he was screaming for bloody mercy. And I was saying, two men, fall in, take this man away, put him in the bloody thing. And the only time we ever had to arrest a bloke in his bloody life. I never needed to do that to anybody in my life. Right, I don't know at that time. I didn't even do that for him.
After the fortnight that you were there, or thereabouts, where did you go then?
Well, from there, after that little incident, like, mine haven't said that. I didn't tell took, he had to go and talk to the colonel, you see, in charge of the camp. I said it was just a little one-off. I said, I would hate to think that this man's got a missing boat, or whatever it could end up. And I said, oh, and the waiter, they just deal with him very leniently. So he just said, right, he says, all right. He said, I don't know what the sergeant had to say about it. He says, right, you can confine the camp for the rest of the time you're here. I wasn't allowed to go up anywhere except to stay in that camp. And that was how that finished up. You know, there's no way I wanted to stay. No. Go through all that. The missus brought home, not for me. Like, you know. Mind that bedroom line is a bit further now. I said, look, lad, I said, we've had our arguments. I said, you've done what you wanted to do. I said, if you've got any animosity, I said, just get in the gym there. I said, there's bound to be some goals in there. I said, get yourself in that gym. I said, look, I said, you take them to bed. We didn't take them.
So then you'd move?
And then we moved from there. We went down to Bombay. We went back on this single track, picked the beer and that tail. And we went down to Bombay. And I couldn't believe it. We went on the dockside, and there's this beautiful ship, an 18,000 tonner. Bloody hell, it looked marvellous, don't it? I said, is that what we're going on? Oh, yeah. And we were the first troops there. Our little bastards were the first ones there. And bloody hell, we don't. And of course, we all had our own boats and everything. And this young engineer officer was in charge of us. So we went back up on the top deck after we'd taken our billets up. And he came to me, this young engineer officer, says, the captain just asked me, I know there's gunners aboard, as well as yourself, like you said, could you fix a couple of gun crews up to man the boat's guns on the way home? I thought, oh, this would be a bloody good sky. This, right? I said, oh, yes, sir, you'll leave it to me, sir. I said, leave this to me, sir. I said, yes, I said, I'll sort this out for you, sir. So we did, and we got our own bunk place.
You were in cabins, were you?
Yeah, we had our own cabins and everything, right? And the only thing was there was two naval gunners on the ship. And he said, mind, he said, you'll be under the control of these two naval gunners. Oh, I said, yes, sir. I said, oh, a great anything, mate, you know, we can get a Skype. So he said, you're in charge of these two naval gunners. And so there was a big 6-inch gun on the back and a little 13-pounder gun on the front. And there was a couple of other things up the top. We were under their control, but they actually they left it to me to dish out the I was dishing the jobs out to them. We used to sit up with the bloody gun sponsors all day. The best of crew with all of being classed as part of the crew, you think, so we had the best of crew with everyone.
So, an eventful journey, was it?
Well, uneventful, yes. Insofar as we travelled back, mind the ship was absolutely full, you know, they filled the ship up in the meanwhile, but we'd scored by getting on first. And we had a very uneventful journey until we got to port side. And we were the first ship to come back through the Med. That was the first passenger ship to come back through the Med, or troop ship, to come back through the Med after the battles in Crete and that, like, you know. And as we left Port Said, there was only two of us in the convoy, both big speeders. Well, that was about 18,000 tons, if memory serves us right. And it could be around 23, 24 knots. There's no submarine. catch up with it unless it was waiting for it. And the other one was the Orion, which was another big ship. And but as we left port side, what the hell's the name of that port again now? Boss fight. Aye. And we were escorted by the warspite and three frigates. I'm saying frigates. They could be corvettes, they could be. I wouldn't know the difference. But there was like three little ones with a big one. And we came back through the Med. And it's the only time I've seen the Med in an angry form. All the time I was alongside the Med, I had never seen that Med in an angry form. And that day, as we left port side, we'd only gone 6 hours sailing or something like that, when one of the Orions bringing engines broke down. So he went back to port side. And of course we carried on from there. And so we had the wars fight and three frigates as an escort all the way through the bend, which as I say was really heaving. The pretty clock was stocking in there. And we got the last Algiers, and the stop there. It must have been for a week or two, must have been. We stopped at Algiers, but we didn't get ashore. Some of the officers went ashore, but we never got ashore. And they had a look round at that then, and we got refueled. We come out of there, we see them come down past the jib. And out into the ocean. God knows where we went in that ocean. We must have sailed pretty miles out of where. Because we seem to be on it for ages and ages and ages. And then all of a sudden, you know, we looked up. We didn't know where it was. Out, but we said, that's Ireland. We're passing to the island. This ship's going like a said. Yeah, I said that I live here not very long before we get to the dock at Liverpool. And we pulled into the dock at Liverpool, and of course, the typical bloody dinghies here, very raining. So we got off in the rain.
What date was this, you recall?
Oh, it'll be about the 14th. Down there, near enough. Back end of the year. We'll be in June, I think, towards the end of June. By the time we've got home, right, you know, because we're
going to Must have been quite a moment for you.
Oh, yes, yeah, it was wonderful to see. That's Liverpool. Oh, God, Liverpool, bloody hell, I'm off. You know, and then we had to get on the train from Liverpool down to Waterloo, where the wagons waiting to pick us up, like for the artillery, that is like. All the people getting up different places. And we got down there to Dunes, and we went into Woolwich, where we were had a medical. We all had a medical, seeing if anyone was with that, had a quick medical and that. And then the next thing was getting on the boat, getting on the train, over to King's Cross, getting on the train, and up. And the only one thing sticks in my mind when I saw Durham Cathedral coming up on the bloody sky. I saw Durham Cathedral on the bloody skyline. I mean, I've been away since 1936. I'm bloody hell, I'm home, I'm bloody up.